Hi, I'm Susie Larson. Here's the podcast for Live the Promise. Enjoy the conversation. Good afternoon. Thanks so much for tuning in today. I'm Susie Larson, and this is Live the Promise, and we are here to help you engage in a strong and active walk of faith. Really glad you tuned in. So glad you're listening today because we've got a great conversation up ahead. I don't know who first said this, but somebody once said, it's not so much what happens to you, but what you tell yourself about what happens to you. And that is just so true. I mean, isn't it a wonder how some will go through horrific tragedies and somehow, some way, through God's help, maybe through counseling, but also reframing their disappointments, they come out of that place, coming through the fire without smelling like smoke, where others may have a lesser thing happen to them, but it still defines them. They're still held captive by it, and it's the thing that identifies them. And what is on repeat is all the stuff that happened to them, right? What would happen if we started to reframe our lives in a different way? If we just, not denial, but really full truth, you know, context that God is giving us. What is true about my life? What's good about my life? And yes, this might be true, but truer still is this promise that's written over my life. Well, Lori Short is my guest today, and her book is titled, When Changing Nothing Changes Everything, The Power of Reframing Your Life. And if you need a reset today, we've got three copies of Lori's book. I'm not taking calls, but at any point, you sure can get in on the drawing by just emailing me, Susie@myfaithradio.com. And remember that mailing address. I know I say it every day, but would you believe I would say 75% of the emails I get still don't get mailing addresses. But those who remember the mailing address, your name goes in the drawing for the book. Before we get Lori on, just a quick shout out. If you're listening on one of our new signals, we're so grateful. Faith Radio is growing like it is. So a special welcome if you're tuning in on 94.1 FM in Hartford, Connecticut, or 93.1 FM in Waterloo, or 104.7 FM in Madison, and 90.7 FM and 97.5 FM. Those are both FM signals in the Twin Cities. Maybe you're streaming online. Maybe you're listening to Live the Promise from New Smyrna Beach, Florida. If you're new to the Faith Radio family, I want to hear from you. Give me an email. Send me an email. Tell me where you're listening from. And if you think of it, include your mailing address, and I'll pick a couple names and get some books off of our Faith Radio shelf and just send you a note to say thank you for listening. So glad to be part of your family as well. So let me tell you about my guest. We'll get her on the show. Lori Short is a speaker, an author, and associate pastor of Ocean Hills Covenant Church in Santa Barbara, California. She's the author of Finding Faith in the Dark, When the Story of Your Life Takes a Turn You Didn't Plan. She's also an author of 13 books for youth and youth workers. She's a graduate of UCLA and Fuller Theological Seminary. As I said, lives in Santa Barbara with her husband, Jer, and her stepson. Lori, welcome back to the program.
Well, thank you, Susie. It's great to be on again.
Well, I love the cover. I bet when you saw this cover, you were pretty happy with it. It's an amazing cover.
Oh, my goodness. I was thrilled. Mm-hmm. They captured it exactly. Yeah.
Covers are hard, you know, especially if you don't like them. You know what I mean?
Oh, so this definitely.
What a happy day to get that cover. I love the book. So we love to start out by talking scripture, Lori. And you chose Matthew 6:22. The eye is the lamp of the body. If the eyes are healthy, the whole body will be full of light. Love that. Speak to that verse, if you would.
Well, that really is the premise of the whole book. And let me just say quickly to our listeners that I chose this name of the book on purpose so that it would be the kind of book you could give to somebody in or outside the faith. Mm-hmm. My dream for it is that it would actually get out of the Christian community and connect with maybe some friends that you have that are leaning in but not quite there in terms of their faith, because I think everybody buys into this premise that your perspective really colors so much of your life. And certainly we know that as believers, and Jesus says that in this verse, that the eye is the lamp of the body, and if your eyes are healthy, your whole body is full of light. And of course he's talking about temptation and where we focus is so much has to do with our choices. And I just took that premise And along with a lot of other scriptures in the book, I started thinking about how much our perspective shapes our faith. And so that's really why that verse is right up front at the beginning of this book.
When it says that the eyes are healthy, the whole body will be full of light, explain what healthy eyes looks like. What, you know,
yeah,
define them.
That's exactly. I'm quick to say at the beginning of the book that I think most people will go, oh, is this just another book that's going to tell me to think positive about my circumstances and see the glass half full? And certainly we all agree with that, that being an optimist is a lot better than being a pessimist. But I really maintain that so much of our life is lived because we see just through a filter, that if we could actually see the whole big picture. And in the book, I offer four lenses to help us do that. The whole big picture of what God sees, we would see our circumstances differently. And I think that's what Jesus is talking about when he is talking about a healthy perspective, healthy eyes, where we focus, where we look when we see what's around us. So that is the best definition that I can come up with, mm-hmm. with healthy eyes and
very
what
good.
Jesus is saying.
Well, in the book, you tell the story about a time when you were invited to speak at the church where you were on staff, and I would love for you to tell how you opened that sermon.
Yes. Well, I was actually speaking on a verse that I talk about in the book, the Philippians verse about being content in all circumstances. And because I was new at the church, I decided to give a little soundbite of my life. I was single at the time, and as you know from my last book, just an extended period of singleness. And so I got up and I didn't say anything. I just said, I just wanted to give you sort of a day in the life of Lori. And I said, I got up this morning and I was all alone. There's no husband, no kids. There's actually a for sale sign out front. And so I'm not sure I'll be able to stay in my place much longer. And, you know, dating at my age is a little rough because everybody has baggage. It's just a matter of choosing what kind of luggage you want to deal with. And I said, and, you know, working at a church as a single person can be painful because you see families and children around you everywhere you go. And I just stopped, and you could have heard a pin drop. Everybody was just staring at me, including the pastor, wondering what in the world I was doing. And I didn't say anything. I just started again. I said, you know, I got up this morning, and I had the whole place to myself. It was quiet, and I could do whatever I wanted. And the for sale sign's still there, so I get to live here another month. And, you know, if it sells, maybe I'll find something better. And dating at my age is actually much better because you know yourself more, and you also have a lot more grace for people because you recognize that life is complicated. And then I said, what a gift to work at a church and have a family where you work when you don't have one at home. Hmm. So, again, there was not one thing that changed about my circumstances except my outlook and the way I saw them. And that's how I opened my sermon on contentment. And I have to tell you, Susie, so many people remember that. Even
wow.
10 years, it's been 10 years, a lot of life since. I'm married now. But there are so many people that remember that illustration. So I think that's where the seed was planted for this book, was how powerful that is for people. And so that's where I begin. And then I, of course, take the reader on a journey of how we can see differently.
Hmm. I would love to know for you, at what point you learned the significance of reframing your disappointments? Obviously, prior to getting to the pulpit that day for the sermon, when did the light go on for you that you thought, I can look at this one of two ways?
Well, I think, you know, we've all heard that, you know, 90% of life isn't what happens to you, but what you do with what happens to you, how you see it, how you respond to it. So I've always known that. But frankly, Susie, you know, there are days where you get up and all you see is loss and disappointment and unanswered prayers. And, you know, in my last book, I wrestled with that in Finding Faith in the Dark. And through that book, I became aware that our perspective of God can shape our faith. How do we see what God is doing in our life? And do we see him as the great killjoy, as the person who's not answering our prayers, who doesn't want us to be happy, who is keeping us from things? Or do we see that he sees things we cannot see and that he's the God of the big story? A bigger story than even our little life is, that we are part of something much bigger. And with those two ideas, I began to think about how we don't just need that when we're going through difficulty. We need that in all of life. I need this every day. Even though I wrote the book, I have to tell you, I get reminded about my own book all the time because I think we need that perspective shift. I mean, that's why so many believers have that time in the morning, that quiet time that reframes your perspective about your life. And so through scripture and through my own experience and through delving into the disappointments of life and how to see them from a faith perspective, I came up with, I believe God really gave me this idea of these four lenses so that we can see more of what God sees or stop to consider more of what God sees as we're living. And that can so help us in the way we respond. So the title of the book really was about where I say when changing nothing can change everything. I what I mean by that is you don't have to change your circumstances, but if you change the way you see your circumstances, it will change the way you respond to them, which actually will make a change in your life. And so that's the premise of the book.
I want you to say that again, because I think that is a game-changing moment. Before we go to break, say what you just said. If we change the way that we see our circumstances, we'll change the way
we respond to them, which then actually makes a change in our life.
Boy.
So when changing nothing can actually change everything.
Excellent. Talking to Lori Short today, title of her book, Lori Pollock Short. Sorry, I just know you by Lori Short.
Okay.
When changing nothing changes everything. The power of reframing your life. Very practical book with some very honest stories. We've got three copies. I love the emails that came in because all of you remembered your mailing address. Thank you so much. That just makes our job so much easier. Susie at myfaithradio.com. More when we come back. We're going to talk about these four lenses. I'll list them for you really quick here. The big view, the present view, the rear view, and the higher view. We'll unpack one at a time. Great conversation up ahead. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Susie Larson. This is Live the Promise, talking to Lori Pollock Short. Her book is titled When Changing Nothing Changes Everything, The Power of Reframing Your Life. And as she said right before the break, when we change our perspective, when we're telling ourselves a better story of what's actually happening in our lives, it actually changes how we respond to what's happening in our lives, which in time changes things. So let's talk about these four lenses, the first one being the big view. Talk about the big view and what that means.
Well, the big view is essentially when you pull back and see the bigger perspective of your life, that you are part of a bigger story. So, for instance, thinking about a mom who spends endless days at home with a child and feels like so much of her life is just wrapped up in what she is doing for this child, and maybe possibly feeling like, you know, does my life really matter? But in fact, when you think about what's happening there between the mother and the child and what will happen in that child's life and the people that child will touch and even the children that child will have and the things that are going on in those moments are way bigger than we think. And this really carries over into our jobs, the people that we touch all the time that are around us. How we respond or what kind of relationship or conversations we have with them that can spin off into actually making a difference in their life. And I tell a lot of stories in that section about that, that kind of influence that we're having without even meaning to have an influence. And as well, it also, that section is just talking about how so often we are in the middle of the story. And as you remember from my last book, I really talked about this idea of middle of the story theology, how when you pull back, instead of just looking at your circumstances, you think about Nelson Mandela or Joseph from the Bible. At any given moment, they could have looked at their circumstances and just felt like their whole life was going to be in a jail cell. And in fact, Nelson Mandela spent 27 years in his jail cell. And you think about what he ended up doing and how that that jail cell was actually just a preparation for what was going to happen in his life. And I think sometimes if we can just take a moment and pull back and say, you know, I might be in the middle of a story right now, and maybe what's happening to me is preparing me for something that's going to happen. And that makes you live your circumstances the best you can, because you recognize that you're getting something right now. Even if it's a painful season, something is happening that you are going to need. And in the meantime, you are influencing the people that are around you at that time. So that's why I think the big view can help us so much. And there are many, many stories, both in the Bible and also just stories of people in life in that section.
Hmm. Love for you to tell that amazing story from World War II. Would you mind telling that one?
Oh, no, no. Actually, you probably know and remember Mike Iaconelli from years ago. Mm-hmm. This is where I got the story. But it's a story out of World War II, and it's so powerful. I've always thought it was so powerful about perspective, where the, you know, obviously they were not where we are technologically. And so the way that England was bombing Germany towards the end is just sending one fighter pilot over, and they would be surrounded by their protective pilots and drop a bomb and then come back until Germany surrendered. And one time England was on, the plane was on its way over, and they dropped the bomb and they were headed back, but they were still in German airspace. And the pilot looked and all of the protective planes were gone. And then they saw the German fighter planes coming closer and closer, and they braced themselves for what they knew was going to happen. And sure enough, five bullets slammed into the fuselage, right into the gas tank, and they literally closed their eyes, and nothing happened. So they were able to regain control and get the plane landed, and a mechanic came on board, and he was able to dislodge those bullets because all they caused was gas leaks, but they didn't explode, and they didn't understand why. And he opened up the bullets, and four of the five were empty. There was no gunpowder inside. And in the fifth bullet, he found a crumpled up little piece of paper that said, "We are Polish POWs, forced to make bullets in factory. When guards do not look, we do not fill with powder." Hmm. It's not much, but it's the best we can do.
And that's something. Wow.
And the thought that those Polish POWs would even think to do anything in their circumstance. But there you have it. That's the Paul outlook, Susie. And that's what Paul did when he was in prison. You think about it. He was in prison and he thought, what can I do? I guess I'll write letters. I'll write letters to encourage the believers, having no idea what those letters would end up doing. And I think that sometimes we have to just look at our circumstances and say, I'm just going to do what I can because God has me here for a reason. And when we do that, oh my goodness, we have no idea what God might do with what we're doing at that time. So
such a good word.
I just think we see evidence all over the place for that.
Yeah. You say what we see in front of us is not always the full picture of what's happening because of us. And a couple more thoughts. I know we've got to get to these other ones too, but you say, you challenge us to actually think about our death and how we want to be remembered. Say a word if you would.
Yes, there's a chapter on how your death can change your life. And I think we all know when we get a death scare or a health problem and we think we're going to die, how it changes the way we look at our life. And so I invite people, why can't we stay there to live at that level of appreciation? And then also to think about the fact that we are not going to be here. You know, 10 out of 10 die. I've read the statistics, and it's true. And so we know that, but for some reason we live in this sort of, you know, anesthetized state so often. You know, we think about it every once in a while, but then we go back to our normal life. And I think if we really think about that and we know we're going to go on forever with our Lord, why not just say, you know what, however many days I have, however hard my circumstances, I want to live the best God-given life I can, because one day I will be in glory. And so this is just my opportunity, really, to live what God dreams my life to be.
You're right. Every role we have, every circumstance we are in, every relationship we are a part of is affected by how we play our part. So to step back and get the big view, it's like I like to say, it's pulling yourself out of the smaller story and consider my life, for one thing, is just in a chapter right now. It's in a season, and this will pass, right? And two, that more people are impacted by my story than I can imagine. So what I say about my time and what I do about this time matters hugely. Okay, we've got about 3 minutes for our hard break at the bottom, but unpack the present view, and we can pick that one up on the other side as well.
Okay. So the present view is really the opposite, where you focus in. It's almost like, you know, you've looked outside the microscope. Now you're going back to the microscope because that's where God invites us to live. So it's really, that's just why there's a specific order to these lenses. You pull back and you get the big view of your life, but then you say, but you know what? I have to live the here and now. That's where God is. He's the great I am. And if I'm living in the past or the future, then I am living mentally without him. And I want to be here and noticing the things that are happening around me right now so that I can respond well to them. And in fact, there are so many things I think that we potentially miss by living too much in the future. And I also talk about how, you know, sometimes when we have a door that we want to see open, we might be praying for something. For me, it was marriage for so long. For others, it's many, many other things. But you're so focused on that door that you miss some of the other doors that God is opening. And what's strange about it is sometimes those other doors can lead to other doors to lead to other doors that actually lead to the door you're looking for. But you have to follow God through the doors that he is opening in the present. So that's why it's so important to stay in the present.
So we've got about a minute and a half left. I'd love for you to just speak to this statement. You said the secret to living your best life lies in your ability to see all that's in front of you. How does that person do such a thing? How do they give just some practical application, how they can open up their eyes and see actually what's in front of them?
Well, honestly, I have three words, and they help me so much, and I try to say them as often as I can, and that's this: be here now. Be here now. And if you just say that to yourself, suddenly you get pulled from your thoughts, which, you know, that's what happens. You know, we think about what just happened or something we're concerned about or something that's going to happen or something we don't know whether it's going to happen and we're worried. And saying be here now means I'm going to look around me right now. I have a whole chapter on the people in our path because God brings people in our path, and sometimes a conversation, something we see, something a person does can change and shift what happens next in our life. And so to be present to what's happening around us is so important. And like I said, we have the great I am, not I was or I will be. That's not how he introduced himself to Moses. He said, I am, for a reason.
Wow, very good. Talking to Lori Pollock Short, her book, When Changing Nothing Changes Everything, The Power of Reframing Your Life. We've got three copies. I'd love to hear from you. Email me, Susie@myfaithradio.com. Don't forget the mailing address. So, Lori, a listener emails in and says, what would you say to people in your life who think you're delusional or just faking it when you have an optimistic perspective? We'll answer that question and more on the other side. Thanks for tuning in today. I'm Susie Larson. This is Live the Promise, talking to Lori Pollock Short. She's got a great book titled When Changing Nothing Changes Everything, The Power of Reframing Your Life. We're looking at four lenses. The big view is stepping back and seeing a bigger picture. The present view is being right here. Be present now. Don't live on the if-onlys or the what-ifs. And we've got a listener, Lori, that wrote in and said, what would you say to people in your life who think you're delusional or just faking it because you have an optimistic perspective in difficult circumstances?
Well, that's a great question, and I think that's why I actually bring that up at the beginning of my book, because I feared the fact that people would say, oh, well, she's just saying, you know, to be polypositive. And I really consider myself more of a realist. Not that I don't try to see the positive, but I don't always go there first. And I think that that what God offers us is really just a bigger view of what's happening. And that makes us more hopeful because we recognize that we're not seeing the whole story. And so rather than just being, you know, I'm seeing that glass half full because I'm not looking at all the negative stuff, it's that I've been actually invited to see more of what's going on around me. Because that's really what happens when you become a Christian. Suddenly your whole view of the world expands into the heavens, and you recognize, oh my goodness, this is just a small part of the story. Whereas people who don't believe in God, I think, just think this is all there is. So I feel that God already sees so multidimensionally, and we're invited to see parts of it. We can't see everything he sees. But I think these lenses can be very helpful in giving us more perspective on what's happening around us. So that would be my response to that.
I often say, too, and this is a tricky thing, but to learn to be content to be misunderstood, because things are proven, you know, bear fruit over time. If you're doing the things God's calling you to do, people are still always going to have their opinions about it. But, you know, and so if you're really just feeling like God's sustaining me in this hard season, and these are some of the really positive blessings from my battle, and people can say what they want, but in due time, you'll come through it and you'll have fruit in your life, and they'll maybe come back and go, hey, how'd you get there? And you can say, you know,
I agree with that, Susie, mm-hmm. because I think actually a spotlight shines on your faith when mm-hmm. you're in difficulty.
Well, think of Paul in prison. You know, I mean, people were jealous of him in prison, for crying out loud, you know?
That's right. Mm-hmm. And I think if everything's going great, nobody really sees evidence of God. I mean, you know, of course you're happy. You know, everything's mm-hmm. going great. But when you're in a struggle and you're trusting God, suddenly people take notice. It's like, wow, how does she have that perspective? So,
and let's just look again at Paul, because that's a perfect example. He's in prison, so because of his faith and the way he framed his perspective, it says in Philippians that the church, you know, the purposes of God move forward. It said that others were encouraged in their faith, and then it said still others were jealous of him, you know. And so I would say, friend listening today, that those are the kind of responses you're probably going to get. The purposes of God will move forward. You're going to have people encouraged by you, and then others, you'll excite the jealousies because of somehow you're stewarding a difficult season in an honorable way, you know? Wow.
Right.
Well, you've written a lot about what it means to walk through those long, dark seasons of the soul. I wonder if you would speak, Lori, to that person who feels like they've gone just too long without seeing the sun. They're weary of more of the same, and they're just longing for a breakthrough. What can you say to them?
Well, honestly, Susie, this is something I just live by. As hard as it is to hear this, you have the makings of the better story. Mm. Because you look, you know, we don't go to the movies to see somebody who has an easy life. We go to see somebody go through struggle and come out and you know, become heroic. You know, I mean, Les Mis is the perfect example of that. But I think even in life, you know, my hero in the Bible is Joseph, because so much of his life was lived in difficulty. I mean, terrible difficulty. I mean, we read really quickly, you know, and when two full years have passed, but 2 years, you know, it's like when he thought he had been forgotten. And that was just the prison part. I mean, there was so much of his journey. And I think we see examples of that. I use my grandfather in the book because he was an immigrant and fought and came over and just, you know, started with barely any English and a dollar in his pocket, and just what he had to overcome. I just think that those are the great stories, and we have a God who's a storyteller, and he also promises us eternity. So this world is really not the whole story. Even if you have easy chapters in your life, everybody goes through pain. Everybody goes through difficulty. It's just in different packages. And I think sometimes we look at other people and think, oh, my life is harder. But it's just because you know your life. Hmm. And you're looking at everybody else's on social media, which is only a half-truth of what their life is really about. Hmm. So I just think you have to, again, it's a perspective thing. You have to say, wait a minute, I have to recognize it's not what it looks like. Mm-hmm. And so that, I think, can help us through.
I love, too, what you said before the break, be here now, because I think I bring so much unnecessary angst into our soul by borrowing tomorrow's trouble and considering what could happen, you know, catastrophizing. If we can be here now in the present tense, with the grace that God gives for the now, boy, we can navigate so much better. And I like this. You said we can see each circumstance as positioning us for what is coming. And this gives us motivation to persevere when things look dark. And maybe that's the word someone needs today. So we've talked the big view, the present view. Let's talk the rear view. And it was so interesting, and I appreciated your honesty in telling the story. But you tell a story about a time when you spoke at a conference. This is when you were single. And you noticed a worship leader noticing you. Tell us that story, if you would.
Yes, so I was single, and a very, very nice-looking man was the worship leader. And we were all the people on staff were staying in a dorm area with all separate rooms, but there was a common space that, and all the kids were kind of in different cabins and so forth. And so after we'd finished, we'd end up walking back and talking and, you know, for so many years as a single person, there were so many instances where I so appreciated friendship with men and married men and was really clear in my mind. But I could always tell when I knew in my heart when something was a possible turn. And I just sensed it. I sensed it with this person.
And he was married.
And he was married, mm-hmm. Yes. But he... You know, it was kind of like I'd ask him about his wife and kids and, oh, yeah, it's, you know, fine. But, you know, we've been at it for a while. And then he just was very taken by everything I said. And, you know, that kind of where it's just filling this need in my heart. But I'm going, you know, I know in my deepest soul that the more time I spend with this, and, you know, it always starts very, very innocently. You're not even close to the physical thing, but you just know when you're starting to proceed emotionally with somebody. And I remember getting back into my, you know, I was in my room and I heard him go out into the living room space and was playing the guitar. And I literally like put my hand on the doorknob and I was about to go out there and I just stopped because I think I just recognized this has nowhere to go except more difficult. And that's the thing that we do with temptation. And I think, you know, you're speaking about the rear view. This is actually more looking ahead. But then what I discovered looking back is that I found out he had an affair a couple years later. So I was absolutely not special. This was a person that was obviously not happy and looking for something. And I think so many times we make decisions in the moment that if we just took a breath and stepped back and saw where this was going, we would stop. And I also think that every decision you make gets harder the further in you go. And that's certainly true in sexual temptation.
Wow.
I mean, I think there are decisions you make way early on that are a lot easier, would be a lot easier than they are when it gets down the road. So
that might be a word, Lori, for somebody listening today who's maybe tiptoeing down that path. I wonder how,
sure.
When you heard that he'd had an affair, how did that hit you?
Oh, my goodness. It was, well, I mean, I think back to so many times, honestly, Susie, you know, when I was single and how intentional I had to be, even not knowing if God had that for me. And as you know from my other book, you know, I was engaged and broke engagement and I didn't get married ultimately till I was 49. So there was so much life where I was around, you know, just wonderful men and most of whom were married. And there were just decisions all the time about that. But I was so thankful to God because, you know, even though God, we have a God of second chances, I just preached on this on Sunday through Jonah. We do have the God of the second chance, no doubt about it, but we make our life so much more complicated when we proceed down those roads. So that I think that's where, honestly, the bigger picture can help us. And the rear view really is more of looking back on how our past can inform what we're doing now. And that can be in terms of your family. I talk about your family and a lot of that stuff. And then I also talk about your faith memories and how that can encourage you for future challenges. So that's where I go into the rear view.
Give a little more example, if you would, about what that would look like for the person walking through a tough time, how a rear view might help them in their present tense.
Yes. Well, I specifically, you know, talk about family because I think we all walk around with things we don't even know we're carrying because of our family, and just a look back can be so informative. And there's a lot of hope in that chapter. I talk about Kurt Thompson's work on the anatomy of the soul and and reworking some of that. But the chapter I think for Christians that's so important is the next chapter about how your memories can build hope. And when you look back on your difficulties and you see, you know, they're not always wrapped up in a neat bow. Sometimes, like for me, being married now to this wonderful man, I can look back on my broken engagement now completely differently, and I thank God for it. But they're not all like that. I think sometimes we look back on painful things, but we see what happened to us through that painful thing and what God did in us and maybe how God used that in another person's life and how we were equipped because of something that happened. So I think time alters our memories and we see hope in what our stories became. And so there's several ways that I think God calls us to remember all throughout the Old Testament. You know, they were always building stone altars every time God showed up. And we need to do that when God shows up in our life and does something either in us or around us or through us. We've got to write it down in some way, remember it, so that when we're in that season, we don't do what the Israelites did when they came out of the Red Sea. They forgot. And all of a sudden they remembered Egypt as this great place with this great food, and they completely forgot what God wanted them to remember. So I think memory is so important. The rear view, you know, I actually call him the rear view mirror God because I think we see so much more of what he was doing when we look back.
Boy, we do. And I think even journaling moments when you hear from God, when you have those, you know, stones of remembrance moments to say, this was a sacred moment. I know God spoke to me, and it's like remembering in the darkness what he told you in the light. So when we come back, we're going to talk about that fourth lens, the higher view. So we talked the big view, the present view, the rear view. The next is the higher view, talking to Lori Pollock Short. When changing nothing changes everything, the power of reframing your life. Love to get your name on the drawing. Email me, Susie at myfaithradio.com. Hope you're having a great day. I'm Susie Larson. This is Live the Promise, talking to Lori Pollock Short. She's got a great book titled When Changing Nothing Changes Everything, The Power of Reframing Your Life. We've been looking at four lenses she outlines in the book. The big view is just stepping back and getting a view of the bigger picture of what God is up to, what he's doing, because your story is more than your story. It impacts many, many other people, and you're in a season that will certainly pass. So to get a bigger picture of what God is up to, then the present view, you kind of scoot in and you get a closer view and you open your eyes to what's happening, not borrowing tomorrow's trouble, getting the grace for that space that you're in right now. And then the rear view, remembering what God has done, remembering what he's told you. You know, we tend to catastrophize the future and we tend to idolize the wrong things in our past, but there are remnants of God's movement in your past, and it's good to remember what he's done so that you remember you've got a history. And now we're going to talk the higher view. I want you to know we've got three copies of Lori's book. I'd love to get your name in on the drawing. Just email me, Susie at myfaithradio.com. Okay, talk the higher view, Lori.
Well, of course, this is the part of the book that I want to, again, encourage listeners. This is a great book to give someone outside of the faith because I think that I myself have done that and have many family members and friends that have read this book as opposed to other books that I've written and have really enjoyed it. And this higher view is really the God view, taking all, you know, being able to see your life in this multidimensional way and then realizing that God has a purpose and a plan for your life. And the way I talk about it is three different ways. One is opening your eyes to the gifts that are around you as well as in your life. And I'm clear to say that sometimes gifts come into our life and they don't look like gifts. They're not packaged in ways that we think are going to be gifts, but they turn out to be the most dearest gifts of all, and I have several examples of people who where that is true. And then I also talk about opening your eyes to need, and that's been a constant in my life. It started in youth ministry as a youth pastor and going on mission trips and working in the inner city, and just opening your life to realize, wow, everything I have is just because I happen to be born in this place with these parents, and I was given these opportunities, not just for myself, but to bless others. And just having that perspective has helped so much, and I need to be reminded all the time because I live in Santa Barbara, which is, you know, I'm always thinking about what I don't have because of everybody around me, but my space is so tiny compared to the world, and just being aware of that. And then finally, of course, the greatest, I think, perspective of the higher view is the purpose for your pain, which really only comes when you know the Lord, to realize that the pain that you've experienced has been given to you for a purpose of touching others, that we are all wounded healers, just like Jesus was. And that is the example that he gave. You know, I have often thought that little verse in John 21 where, of course, Thomas says, unless I can put my hand in his side and see the marks in his hands, I won't believe. And Jesus comes back with his wounds. And then right after that, he says, as the Father sent me, so I send you. And I've always made that connection to where, isn't it interesting that Christ came back with the wounds in his body? That's how he identified himself and then said that to his disciples. In other words, with your wounds, you go into the world, and God uses you so powerfully in those areas that you've experienced yourself. There isn't anybody else you want to talk to when you're going through a problem than somebody who's been through it. That person is always so much more understanding, and you feel like you can gain so much more wisdom from them and courage from them. So I believe that God gives us our lives for the purpose of touching others because he has glory in mind. We're not there. And, you know, we're all going to experience sorrow and heartbreak and sickness and loss of friends and family, and then we ultimately die, and then we go to be in glory. But at this time, God uses everything in our life to touch others. And so that really is the higher view. And then, of course, I end the book with really this opportunity to look at your life with new eyes.
What we suffer now is nothing compared to the glory that will be revealed to us later. And
right.
Think about that our light and momentary troubles are achieving for us a glory that far outweighs them all. And they don't feel light and momentary, but Scripture says they are compared to the glory. So what glory awaits us? Oh, Lord, give us eyes to see even in the midst of our hardship. And wondering if you've got a favorite story or two from this section that you could share with us.
Well, I think, too, mysteriously, Susie, healing happens when we make that decision to take our pain and let it be used in other people's lives. And I have some dear stories that really were tragedies that happened, but how people have turned them around. A couple that had a child that ended up, the father had his eye removed because of a cancer and genetically pass it on to his son, but his son did not survive. And what they have come to do since then, every summer they attend this camp that they were able to go when they had Zach, to become counselors for other families that are walking through this. I have another friend who experienced a terrible, terrible chapter of sexual abuse through a brother-in-law, and how since then and through her own counseling and her own healing, she has become a healing agent, not just to the women of her community, but even extending into Belize, where she's taken mission trips and uncovered all kinds of things that these women have faced, and just being able to see the hope. And then, of course, I think my person that opens the book is my friend Chris, who has cerebral palsy and lives every day in a wheelchair, and it takes him an hour just to get dressed. And he has done things in his life. He's a part of our church that you cannot even imagine. He's been on mission trips. He's done half marathons in his wheelchair. He works at a science museum. He was the DJ at my wedding. Hmm. And he has lived in his body that has not been healed the most glorifying life. And I just, these stories have inspired me so much, so that's why I wanted to share them with the world and just encourage people to take their God-given life and live it to the best that they can. And ultimately, I think God brings healing and hope in the living. I really do. As we are living that out, we actually get healed and get more hope because of the way we're living.
Just got a couple minutes left before it's time to pray here. And you're right in this section. We often miss out on the freedom that letting go can bring. I'd love for you to say more about that.
I think that letting go is the hardest thing. I don't know about you, Susie, but that's like the hardest thing in my life.
It's like a free fall.
And I mean, you know, I'm miscontrol, and when we can get there, where we actually let go of expectation of what we thought our life was going to be, and accept the life that we've been given, and then live it to the greatest opportunity we can, not faking when we're disappointed, because God wants to hear our honesty, but just saying, God, I'm going to take, you know, I think about the 49 years I lived as a single person, never wanting to be single, but thank God I didn't just live the, all those 49 years just waiting for the rose, for the bachelor that would come with the rose. I mean, I had to live my life. And I think, you know, C.S. Lewis has this great line in one of his Chronicles of Narnia where Shasta's crying about something and he says, you know, sooner or later you have to stop crying and you have to start figuring out what you're going to do. And I think that at some point we all have to get there. After the grieving, after the loss, we have to say, okay, now what am I going to do with this God who has eternity in mind and who has hope in mind, and who might change my story. This might be in the middle of my story. He can do anything. Can I live in that anticipation of hope and knowing that someday these circumstances will change? And that will cause you to, I think, live your circumstances differently.
Mm. Laura, you've done a brilliant job today. Appreciate you so much. And the book is just a work of art. It really is. And I'm wondering, as we get ready to wrap, first I want to tell friends, if you've not emailed me yet, love to do that. You might be the person who wins a copy of the book, Susie@myfaithradio.com. And remember that mailing address. As we get ready to wrap here, I'm wondering if you pray for that person who's listening and hanging on every word going, I desperately needed to hear this. I'm in a pretty vulnerable place and I need a reset, a fresh perspective. Would you pray for that person?
Yes. So God, we do just commit any listeners who might be in that place where they don't see, but maybe they just tuned in today or are listening afterwards and they just are hearing what they needed. God, thank you for your word. Thank you for your promise. Thank you that you give us new eyes. You give us a new heart and you give us new eyes. And we just need each moment to access it. And so that is my prayer. I pray that this book can be used to help people, that it's a tool, that it's a journal, that they can remember all that you are and all you want them to see, and that you created them for a purpose in the big story that you are writing with all of our lives. So God, with that in mind, and we think about the Lord's Prayer that really frames our life, to know that you are God and Father of us all. And so I pray that you would help us live our lives to your glory. And we pray this in the powerful name of Jesus, who helps us when we can't help ourselves. Amen.
Amen. Lori, I pray you'll come back and join us again. Just really fabulous conversation. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for having me, Susie. I'll come back anytime.
All right. Wish you God's best. Well, you've been listening to Live the Promise. I'm Susie Larson. In just a bit, you'll find a podcast of today's program up on our website at myfaithradio.com. And remember this, the Lord wants you to last long and finish strong. He is the one who'll keep you strong to the end. Have a great day. Thanks for listening to this conversation from Live the Promise. These podcasts are available because of listener support. You can make a gift now at myfaithradio.com. And thanks for sharing this audio link with a friend. Help grow the impact of the show. Also, if you would, take a moment to subscribe to the podcast today at iTunes or your podcast player, and then never miss a show.